Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, October 25th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and even Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Let everybody know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made this past week to buy NBA 2K21 on PlayStation 4 when there's a possibility that I could soon get a PlayStation 5. And I'm not able to freely upgrade unless I paid $100 for the Mamba Forever Edition. Thanks, 2K Sports, for making the death of a great athlete, making money off of it. And I'll have to spend more money. So the reason I did it is because I got the game. The game was $38. It was on sale a month after the release. It was $20 cheaper. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I want to have my rosters and all that stuff. I want to do this, but I bit the bullet and I started missing these point blank layups with Rajon Rondo, who I know is a two-time NBA champion, does not miss point blank layups like that. I kind of regret that purchase. I played it for 20 minutes. On the day that I bought it, and it happens. Sometimes you make mistakes, and now there might be a chance that I could get a PS5. We'll see what happens. But there's things that are more important in life than a video game console for a 40-year-old man. Like maybe companionship. Maybe that's a little more important than a fucking video game. This is episode 460. I have two super special return guests. You know both of them and you love them both. Rod Morrow from the Black Guy Who Tips podcast and Randolph Terrence from the Three Guys On podcast. We did it. I'm just presenting it to you now, but we did a Lovecraft Country roundtable event, and I'm going to share that with you in a few minutes. I just wanted to tell you a couple things. One, the reason that I wanted to do it was because I thought the show was fantastic. I love how it was evocative of so many different genres, so many storytelling tropes and all these cool things, all this great imagery and this melding of media from great black artists. And it was a big, beautiful hodgepodge of blackness. And it was amazing. And then I saw, critiques, and I'm not saying, like, I had Luisa Diaz on a couple weeks ago and we talked about critiquing things and it's important to critique things, but I just did not like the direction that some of them were going to. And I've had like brief conversations with Randolph offline talking about it. And I said, you know what? I think I want to talk about it with my friends. My friends that feel the same way about it as I do. And I wanted their insight on it. And I got it. Another thing I wanted to say, technical issues. My mic was, I don't know what was going on with my mic. This was my first attempt at recording on Zoom. And Rod and Randolph sounded fine. Me, I don't know what the hell was going on. I'm going to have to talk to my one of my executive producers, Andy Klein. I'm going to have to talk to him about the sound and see what I could do to fix that. Thankfully, I did not talk that much, to your joy. I did not talk that much during this episode. So you get Randolph and Rod dropping science and on this. And this was basically, and I think I told them this during our conversation, that this was basically a selfish endeavor of mine to really just kind of get this down on wax, to just kind of parse out the things that we liked about the show and what it meant to us. And then, like, just to kind of push back a little bit on some of the critique, not all of the critique that we were seeing, because I just didn't like, you know, from a lot of these shows that are the prestige shows, like your Sopranos or Mad Men or Breaking Bad, like I liked to, when I would finish watching those shows, I would read recaps and look at, you know, reviews and look at YouTube clips, and just to say, oh, what's the meaning in this scene, and to find this deeper meaning into stuff. And I saw people seeming to think it was, to me as a nerd, like, that's the fun, that's part of the experience also. You talk to your friends about it, you read about stuff. Why did they pick this song? And I just saw a little negativity when it came to this show in particular, because I could see people finding the time to do research in other shows that I liked that had was a mainly white cast. But now that the show has black creatives and black actors in the show, it just seemed to be a little different, you know? And that rubbed me the wrong way. So I just kind of wanted to talk about that and get those thoughts and feelings from two people who I trust, and to see if I wasn't off base for thinking that, or I had this, you know, pushback, because sometimes I can get a little too invested in some of these shows when the actors are black, just because I want to see it do well. Not to say that there's, you know, black shows that are bad, whatever. We talk about it during this episode. Please excuse the technical difficulties what was going on my end, but I don't think it's that big of a deal, but I noticed it and I'm going to work to fix it. But you can see me trying to be expansive with this podcast, to try to take it up a notch or two. And sometimes there's growing pains. Okay, we'll just say that. And I hope that we'll try to get them fixed the next time this happens, because I have plans for this show. Okay. So without further ado, I want you to please enjoy Randolph Terrence, Rod Morrow, and myself talking about Misha Green's Lovecraft Country.
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. Good.
Great, good. Man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
As always.
Yeah, I wanted to just, talk about this. I'll just start with Randolph. Basically, I wanted to just see what are your overall thoughts on the show, and give me your overall thoughts on the show, Randolph.
First, I thought it was great. That's not even a question. Hands down, it's one of the best things I've seen this year. It's one of the best things I've seen in a long time. I loved pretty much every aspect of it. I know we'll talk a little bit about what we didn't like about it. There's only one real issue I had with the whole show, but other than that, I thought it was fantastic. Considering that I read the book, I thought that the departures from the book were perfect. That didn't really matter. And what I saw in my mind while I was reading the book, it kind of played out on the screen. So I thought it really matched what I already had in my head. You know, I thought it was fantastic. So black, which I feel like is needed. We don't get enough of this type of blackness on the screen. From everything from civil rights blackness to Afrofusion. What are we calling it?
Afrofuturism, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know if that's the word for it, Afrofuturism. But we even got to see Afrofuturism on the screen, which we very rarely get to see. We got to see every aspect of blackness played out in one show. Positively, by the way, all of it was played out in a positive manner. I thought it was great. I don't see there's no reason to do a part two, to do a Lovecraft Country number two, unless it's a completely different story that is just we're going to use the theme of this to write other stories like this. I can see that. but kind of like a Twilight Zone-ish type thing, you know what I mean? Like, we'll use the spirit of this to write other stories. But to try to pick this story up, no, it's a complete story. It's over and done.
That is interesting that you said it, because it's almost like a, could it be like an anthology, like a Black Mirror with some of the same...
Yes, aspects? Yes, I would like to see that.
Or even like
to see...
Yeah.
See that keep going? Like, we're going to keep going in this vein, and we're going to tell other stories. Because we know there are other stories and other storytellers to be told. That could be something that Jordan could do, bring other storytellers in, tell other stories like this.
Or like they're doing yes. with Fargo now, yeah.
Right.
There's some...
Let each story be a complete...
God damn it!
Sorry, brother, sorry.
I was just going to say, like, because you made me think about this, like, it could be like Fargo... What they're doing, how there's different stories, but there's some threads that link right. everything together. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Let each story be a separate standalone, and just try to keep the quality up. And you're gonna miss sometimes, like True Detective did season 2.
Yeah,
you know, but then they picked it back up in season 3. Mm-hmm. You know, and I thought season 3 of True Detective was great, so I could see them doing something like that. Lovecraft Country. Lovecraft, blah, 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 next Lovecraft Country to a completely different story, mm-hmm. but still in the same vein, you know, and still black, just blackness up on the screen. Yeah, I think there would be a serious market for that.
What about you, Rod?
Oh, I mean, I love this series. I feel like it was made for my type of black nerdery, like...
That's a good call, Rod.
When it goes into, you know, we're dealing with time travel, multidimensional theory. We're dealing with, obviously, race in America, which almost never really works its way into science fiction. Science fiction is normally an allegory for race. You know, it's always like, what if aliens came to the world and they were like white people are to black people? And this time it was like, you don't have to imagine that. The horror elements and using race as horror was just a chef's kiss. You know, Misha did that. The acting and casting, I mean, just amazing black ass acting. Michael K. Williams, just like so many levels to that onion of that character. These characters must have been so fun to play. You know, Tick being such a flawed but also heroic dude. You know, Ruby, you know, shout out to One Me, that's Bay now, but she, like seeing a character like with that kind of depth on the screen, was really dope. So, all that stuff was great. They didn't leave anything on the ground as far as a narrative. Like, it was so funny seeing pieces say halfway through, like, this show is sloppy. It doesn't make, and it's like, they get to the end. It's like, they picked up every little piece that was on the ground. Like, no, we explained that. And then the other thing I would say is I do think they could do a season 2 in this world and continue it. I think they left themselves some room when, Tick said he went through the portal and he saw riots with white people and, he was only there for a second in the future, but the D obviously handed him a copy of his son's book and sent him back through the portal, right? I want to see a world where black people have this power and what they do to disrupt white supremacy, because I feel like that's where you go next. And what the fuck does the world's history look like, not just for America, but the world, you know what I'm saying? Like, what does it look like when black people have power? I would love to see that shit, bro. I don't know if they'll do it, because like you said, there's other ideas, like the anthology idea is great. Shit, they could skip forward to the future and just do like what D and her black show goth running around the universe. So like, they could do so much with this, but the main thing I took from this show is that they took something that is extremely limited, 1950s black segregated life,
on the counter for you.
And they made it
Randolph, mute yourself.
Can you
mute yourself being a good black dad? Jesus.
Oh, no, will you let me be a daddy, please?
What are you doing, bro? Raising your kid?
Do you hear my black dad impatience?
Participating in the life of your child that you made?
Trying to raise a daughter.
What are you doing, dude?
But yeah, man, they could do a lot with this, man. And I like, wherever they take it, I'm down. I just, the main thing for me is wherever they take it, they need to bring Misha Green and the crew back. Like, they, like, yeah. you can't just throw it, just a whole nother showrunner on this like it's no big deal. I feel like this creative team just fucking nailed it, and they need to keep as many people on staff as possible.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I echo everything that you guys just said. I mean, it's evocative of so much that it could become overwhelming at times, but I think at the core, it was a show about family, and they're in these extreme circumstances, and I just felt like, you know, that I don't remember the piece, but I think you guys know the piece I'm talking about. When it came around, like episode five, I want to say, and where is this going? I don't understand it. And then they threw in Antebellum, which I don't think was fair. And it was just kind of like, well, what? And then they hit us with episode six, where we go to the Korean War, and it's just like, oh, it's even more expansive, you know, like and I think I was listening to Misha Green on the last episode of the Lovecraft radio podcast on HBO, and she was just saying, I like you and Randolph, and I want you both to speak on this after I'm done, to talk about like being a black nerd, being in the science fiction and stuff like that. She basically said what you and I always talk about, Rod. When she was a kid, she grew up liking all these genres, liking pulp, liking all these films and shows and everything like that. And she just wanted to see black people participate in those tropes, in those narratives, in those worlds. Randolph, I want to start with you. Talk about maybe what it was like for you growing up and being a black nerd.
You know, it was interesting when Rod said that, when he touched on it, about the black nerdism aspect of it.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't normally see that up on the screen. You know, what was funny for me is that as soon as the first episode, maybe it's because of all the reading, because I was a big sci-fi reader. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I've been ready for something like this.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I was like, yeah, this is what I've been waiting on. This is what I'm ready for. So this, I don't have to do the thing where I have to be like, well, why the fuck is that happening? Well, why is this going on? Or why is that? No, I'm ready for this. I've been waiting on this moment to come, and here it is. So I don't have to prepare my mind for this, or I don't have to get my mind right. I think a lot of the critical pieces that were written were people who didn't have any connection to this type of stuff, didn't have any connection to this type of work, and it didn't resonate with them. Yeah. So they're looking for something else you're basing it on Antebellum. That doesn't make any sense. It's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, sci-fi stands alone. If you want to base it on something, go find a Twilight Zone episode to base it on or something like that. They're out there. You just don't see black people in them. You know, I love Twilight Zone. I loved Outer Limits when mm-hmm. I was a kid growing up. I love sci-fi. I love reading them, but I always had to find a character to relate to because mm-hmm. there was no black character for me to relate to. And if there was one, I liked that one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The one. And it could be a bad guy. I don't give a shit. That's my person right there.
And it's interesting. Like you say that you've been waiting for a show like this, and we're all in our 40s and 50s.
Right.
And haven't seen anything. I would say that I was, and I'll get to Rod on this too. I would just say that I was on the periphery of that, of like, I like Star Wars and Star mm-hmm. Trek was okay. And I liked, you know, all these cartoons and comic book superheroes and stuff, but I wasn't as, immersed in those worlds. But I would say that I noticed that a lot on Twitter, like some of our mutual friends would be like, oh, that's a Kamiho, or Gia is this, and XYZ, with making these comparisons to anime and what have you. So it just made me look it up. I was like, oh, I don't know what that is. I'll look it up. But it just,
I did that too.
It just seems weird to me that with criticism, you constantly see, like, I love a lot of the top shows like Breaking Bad, Sopranos, Mad Men, but recently with like Breaking Bad and Mad Men, I would read like recaps of the show. I'm like, oh, when they picked this song, this meant this, and this relates to it like that. Why aren't people doing that with this one?
Because it's too black.
I'm sure there are people are doing that, but it just seems like it's not that much of a chore.
Well, it's interesting, though, because what happens, what I think this show does differently than a lot of those shows is that it's so grounded in real world things that happen to black people that some people can't turn their brains off, and it becomes this like trivia hunt, and so they're missing the story. Like, that's the thing that struck me, and the common theme in a lot of the criticism seemed to be, it's so much, it's just so, it's overloading me, and why did they say this, and why about this? And I'm like, to me, though, I know those things. So it didn't feel like work to me. And then the other part is I know the sci-fi shit too. So the sci-fi doesn't feel like work either. It's like, you know, I don't watch too much, Rick and Morty, too much, anime, too much, you know, Back to the Future for y'all to just be like, well, you can't throw in fucking Plessy versus Ferguson and time travel. I'm like, I can do both. You know what I mean? Now,
yeah, well, that's the beauty of sci-fi.
Right.
I can do whatever the fuck I want to do.
Yes. And so,
there's nothing stopping me.
And so to see like this idea of taking 1950s oppression of black people and then throwing black people in this basically, this contest almost to see who could get to power, who could get to this inheritance that belonged to us. I mean, I was so ready for this shit. Like, oh, we got an Indiana Jones episode. I'm in. Yeah. Like, I don't need you to hold my hand through this shit, dog. I watched all the Indiana Jones. Like, so for me, I felt, I did not feel as overwhelmed. The other thing I thought was interesting, you know, no shade to the people that wrote the pieces, but, well, I guess it is shade. There's really no way to say this without shade, but it was interesting how much they put Watchmen on a pedestal that was ultimately show run by this white man. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, that was was, to me, I loved Watchmen, but Watchmen is still taking, the same idea, right? You're taking some white man's concepts, his IP, his original concept. They've made other movies and books and all this stuff off of it, and then you're reducing it down to 8 episodes starring a black woman, which is cool, but we've gotten that before. I mean it's not like they broke the mold with that shit. We never got this before, where black people showrun, black people produced and made this thing, and there were white people that directed some of the episodes. But how the fuck you gonna big up Watchmen with a white showrunner and then this one with that, cause it has some white directors? Like, that's like the ideas at flux here to come at this product were just incongruent to me. And it felt like they were doing what they accused the show of, which was essentially, I'm gonna critique this show on behalf of blackness to white people. Like, let me explain to you white people why I don't like this and why black people shouldn't like this. And I think that's bullshit. We've gotten so much content now. We don't need every black thing to speak to every type of black person. This is just for the black nerd people and black race nerds and shit like that. And that's okay sometimes.
Yeah,
I think people have this thing where they just can't. If I'm not included, then fuck all of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I'm not included, fuck all of you. And if you ain't talking to my blackness, well, then fuck you. It's not good, and I'll invent a reason to tell you why it's not good.
I think it had a lot to do with FOMO, because this is prestige television. And I remember, Rod, when you were the last time you were on the show, you and I were talking. I'm like, oh, I was asking you, I was like, oh, should I bank all these episodes and then binge? Or should I be watching? Because people will probably spoil this on Twitter, but this is kind of a hard one to spoil.
There's no way.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's like there's no way to describe it. Really? Yeah. I've tried to see people to describe it. I'm like, I can't describe it to you. You gotta see it. Go watch it.
Did y'all see that SNL sketch?
I haven't seen it yet. Was it good?
Yeah,
it was about like all the black characters at I think it was when Chris Rock hosted, I think. But all the black cast members were at a Tennessee Titans game, and one character was like, "Oh, after this game, I'm gonna go watch Lovecraft Country," and they were like, and they just started, "Well, what is it about?" And she couldn't really explain it.
Yeah,
and then the Heidi Gardner character was like asking questions. She's obviously white,
right?
And they were like, she was clowning on her, and it was really funny.
I gotta check it, man.
But what I realized just listening to that podcast, the HBO Radio, I mean Lovecraft Radio, they had with Ashley C. Ford and Shannon Houston, who was one of the writers on the show. She was saying, like, you know, this show is about escaping the white gaze.
Yes.
And you see that especially in episode two, where it's like they're being surveilled in that mansion. And I was like, oh shit, they're trying to get away. And we constantly, like a lot of our colleagues, and we all constantly talk about the white gaze. This show is trying to escape that, trying to find like its own.
Dog, not only that, but you don't have that final scene, the ending scene, in a show that's concerned about white people. Gets left on the cutting room floor. Jordan Peele did Get Out, and he literally said they focus tested the main character choking that white woman to death to end the movie, and it tested so bad they were like, fuck it, we'll just make it where he basically walks off and leaves her to die in the street, right? And yeah. With this series, you have a little black girl with a cybernetic arm that walks up and says they still haven't learned. And the first time I watched it, I thought, oh, white people still haven't learned, because you know, Christina's on the ground like, help me, D, help me. And then I'm like, oh wait, I think she's talking about us black people. She's saying we haven't learned. You can't leave these motherfuckers alive.
Right.
And that I'm like, now how the fuck you watch that and then you walk away and be like, yeah, man, they just worried about trying to get these white people to like it. No, the fuck they not.
Because they put a load on episode 5. Trying to be cute.
Which one was that?
Well, you know, when you just talk about like the episode, I can't remember the article, but it came out.
I remember it. It was in the Undefeated.
Okay, that's so, what it was.
Yeah.
What was that episode about? Was that the shoe in the ass episode?
Shoe in the ass episode.
Yeah.
Right. I was fine with that, by the way. I was like, oh, okay, well.
Yeah.
I was like, ooh, but yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, they was acting too. Like they one did that.
Because they were saying in that episode specifically, like, it's interesting to, like, obviously listen to Rod's podcast about, Rod and Karen talk about the show, their recaps, but what was interesting, Shannon Houston was talking about the struggles or the conflicts that they had in the writer's room, and what it was really fascinating to hear, you know, what she said about that. And she was saying that in that time, the year that this took place, I guess it was in the 50s, but a certain time in the 50s, the stiletto came out. Mm-hmm. The stiletto was introduced, and they said, oh, we're going to use that. And I was like, oh boy. Just like from a, like, I like how, like, Rod and Karen break it down, where, like, you talk about, like, in the theater, you talk about, like, the, you have a dramaturg, especially if you're doing a period piece, and you have a person who's basically a historian, and they gather all these materials of that era, and which makes everything more lived in, and you have, and it's great, like, the work that they did.
And the thing for me was in that piece, she totally missed that this was Ruby's Jekyll or Hyde transformation, right? Like, Jekyll and Hyde, that Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde is playing on the fucking TV. Is like that's one thing I'll say about this show. If you want to come for the show and be like, it's not subtle, okay, like, it's not a very subtle show. It's mostly like message, like, we listen. This is what we talking about. We talking about it right here in your face. And so maybe you will have some issues with the lack of subtlety, but to completely whiff on shit, like, then you must have walked in with your arms folded, having an agenda. You know what I mean? Because to me, it was so fucking obvious that they were being like, yeah, I mean, even the body morphing thing is Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know?
Yeah.
And this woman's black rage being her, you know, Mr. Hyde on this dude's ass. Like, it was like, that shit was amazing to me. And it's like, when do we ever see black women like that? When do we ever see black women get to be rageful, vengeful, but not crazy? You know what I'm saying? Where the, yeah, where the it's not like Thin Line Between Love and Hate, where we're like, man, she's just crazy. You know, like, yeah, this was like, no, this is valid, justifiable rage. And I don't think I've ever seen black women's rage painted this way and validated this way in any series.
I don't think we have. And that's one of the things that they talked about, how in the writer's room, how, well, how many women does this manager have to beat up, or how many does he have to assault? Is it like, no, she's everything, like the history of,
yeah. Well, you know, what's funny about, you know, what's funny about that scene is that people were upset. I'm like, let me see if I'm getting this right. You're upset because a rapist got assaulted.
Right.
You know that he's raped untold numbers of women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know that. And he represents, as you were saying, Chris, is he represents the abuses that white men have leveled on black women since the dawn of slavery.
Right.
And you're mad about that? Man, mm-hmm, please.
Dog, that's why I ain't believe these niggas when motherfucking George Floyd got killed and they was out here talking about hashtag burn it all. I'm like, y'all niggas are whack. That's not even true. Y'all not really down with that shit, because this is what that attitude looks like when you be like,
right,
cause we can't prove that man was Jack the Ripper, but you know what we did know? He set that black woman up got that job, first black woman ever. And when she walked in that office, what's the first thing he was talking about? Firing her. Like, he, yep, after he tried to assault her, he was gonna fire her. So to me, where's the sympathy I'm supposed to have for him? And why am I supposed to feel bad that she, basically violated him back? Like, fuck you, man. That's, I want to see a show take chances like that. And that right there was the clue, yeah, that this show was gonna end the way it did, with us being like, no more magic for white people. It's blacks only magic now. And, we taking shit over.
Yeah.
Right. Right, right. Oh, and by the way, this young waifish black woman, this young waifish white woman that's left here, let me just go ahead and break her neck.
Dog. Bruh, never thought I'd see it. Never thought I'd see it on screen, dog. Honestly.
Yeah.
I was like, I kept waiting. I was like, I wonder, is D gonna let her go? Oh no. Okay. All right. We bout it. We bout this shit. So, like, I see you in season two. I don't like, you had my attention. Now you have my respect. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that was a perfect line to go out on. They never learn. Snap. Oh.
D carrying towards, okay, the future. She gonna know. Okay. D gonna know. I want to, yeah, see what her life gonna be like, with King the Black Shoggoth.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody about that. I was like, well, they got a big ugly dog now. They just, mm-hmm, got a big ugly dog.
Big mean. it's mean to other people, but big mean pit bull. You know how we do. You feed them table scraps. You know,
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly.
What's the D.L. Hughley bit? He eat what we eat.
Right.
Yep.
Don't take him to the vet. Yep. You know what I'm saying? We just.
Nope, he got high blood pressure. Dogs, yep, are supposed to have high blood pressure. Right.
What's that comic with the little black girl and the dinosaur?
Oh, that's a Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur.
That's what it made me think about.
Yeah, man.
I just like, you like kind of see that for the future for her.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I want to shift. What are Rod, let's start with you. What are your favorite, who are your, like, your top three episodes?
Oh man, bro, you can't do me like this.
Gun to your head.
First of all, I could literally give you a reason why each episode is the greatest. Okay. Sure. Let me just start there. All right. So I would say for me, it's Sundown.
Mm-hmm.
The opening, the Sundown Towns, the Gordon Parks tribute, the Shoggoths, the racist sheriff, all that shit, man. It was so great. And how I still think of conflating the terror of white supremacy in these sheriffs with the Shoggoths at the end, Yeah. And the thing I mostly remember is still the white terrorism.
I have it playing in the background and it's right on that scene. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy that like they still did not want to give up their supremacy within the midst of this like monster.
Right. He wouldn't shoot the racist white man.
Right.
And ended up letting himself die. It's like voting for Trump. You know what I mean? That was one of my favorites. Holy Ghost is so good.
Yeah.
Oh God. You know, I'm not going to count Holy Ghost. I'm going to skip that one. I am, Hippolyta and the infinity of her. And her blackness, I keep saying, like, Hippolyta is like if Tony Stark was just born in the 50s as a black woman. You know what I mean? Like, where it's just like all of life, just if all of life, instead of empowering this white man to go be the greatest, was like, you ain't shit, you can't eat at our counters, you got to get married, you need a man, how would that have like subverted his path to greatness? And then she gets this chance to go be infinity. And I mean, that episode was just the Afrofuturism in it. It was so beautiful, man. And to see like a woman that age get to be like this hero, get to be sexy, get to be like smart, all this shit, man. Like, you just don't see that, man. I never saw that coming when I was watching Undercover Brother.
Well, she always been bad, man.
Yeah.
Can you maybe tell me what the, how long was she gone in human years?
So,
like 200. On, 200 years.
Oh, yeah, on Earth 504. On Earth 504, she was gone 200 years. In our world, she must have been gone about 3 or 4 weeks because they said what happened was, she left, Bobo got killed. And then, and that was, I think they said two weeks from the last time they saw Hippolyta at the observatory. So, okay. However she figured it out, she did get back to her, but after experiencing 200 years of just badassery. And then of course my last one, man, I mean, I don't know how you can't put this one, but Rewind 1921. I mean, I think that's just one of those episodes that is going to live on for everybody. Even people I saw that have said they hated the show, people that said they were confused by the show, all that shit, even they had to bow down and be like, okay, yeah, this one, this is the one. Cause I never seen Tulsa alive. I've only seen Tulsa destroyed, period. Like in fiction and documentaries and everything.
And they said that was like the day that it happened, it was prom.
Yep. Like all that shit was real.
Yeah.
Right.
And people are like, oh, I heard somebody say on a podcast, it's Tulsa again, just like the Washington. So the fuck what?
So let's stop that. Cause I like when people say shit like this. It's like when people go, it's too many slave movies. Okay. So it's Tulsa again. You tired of Tulsa? How many times have you seen it in fiction again?
Twice.
Right. So you basically telling me two times of revisiting the most terroristic event in American history.
How many Holocaust movies have you seen?
Right. How many Holocaust movies have you seen? I'm not even gonna push it that far. How many 9/11 movies have you seen? We've seen 9/11 movies more than we've seen 9/11 was 20 years ago. Yeah. We've seen more movies about 9/11 than we've seen people bring up Tulsa in fiction. Get the fuck out of my face, dog.
And this one was like in production first, I think, or they started writing this first.
It wouldn't even matter.
I know.
Yeah.
Don't matter.
You don't even got to justify it. They can make next year HBO can come out with Tulsa the series. You really cannot. It's this thing where people, they, what they don't want to admit is they don't want to talk about this shit.
Yeah.
And for me, I've been waiting my whole life for us to be able to talk about this shit. So, you know, I'm ready. Like, let's go. Let's go round two.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. We're not supposed to talk about Tulsa because it makes you uncomfortable. That's what you're saying, right? This makes me uncomfortable, so let's not talk about it. Well, don't make me uncomfortable. Right. So, and you being uncomfortable actually makes me happy. So I want to talk about it.
We go to World War II and everything. Yeah, every piece of like a world. It's a World War II episode of Family Guy. It's a World War II episode. Like, it's just everybody revisits that shit because America was the heroes then. You know what I mean? But we don't like to revisit this shit. Well, we took that where there is no win for whiteness, where white people are just a monster. We don't like talking about that shit, bro. And, you know, like I said, that's low key why I fuck with slavery movies too. Cause I'm be like, we talking about this. Like, let's, you know, I'm not saying every slavery movie is good. You know, I prefer mine directed by black people, but still, let's talk about it. We don't talk about it enough. So yeah, to knock it for that. And then for this to beat the Tulsa episode is at once time travel, right? Alternate dimension. And then the third act turns into a fucking tragic opera. Like, they were just fucking, it was just bars, bro. Like, the whole time, they were in their bag in this episode. To a certain extent, I even, not that I agree, but when people were like, well, you know, the ending felt like, it felt a little bit flat.
I gotta
for me.
Find a parking space.
And I was like, I can see why they feel that way because 9 was so great. So, yeah, I think those are my top three, man.
Okay. I will go with, I don't think Randall's doing something.
Randall, no, I was just letting the baby out of the car.
Oh, give us your top three episodes.
I don't know the names the way Rod does. I just know the ones. So, the second to the last episode, Tulsa.
Yeah.
That's my top episode. Because again, it was about Tulsa, but it was about another aspect of Tulsa we didn't get to see, which was an actual family having to deal with what was happening around them. We didn't get to see that in The Watchmen. We saw it a little bit, but not nearly that depthful. Mm-hmm. You know, is that a word? That's a word. That much depth. You know, so we got to see that. That episode actually brought tears to me. And not over death, but just little things like Tick realizing that he was the stranger. Mm-hmm. You know, when that moment happened, I was like, I think Rod, you and I have talked about that before. I'm like, there are things happening in this show that are just for us.
Yeah.
Like, that's for us.
Yeah.
You know, when he, well, now, cause I'm screaming at the screen. I'm like, that's you, man. You're
me
the
too.
Stranger. Pick up the bat.
Me
go,
too.
Go.
Like, Karen was looking at me on the couch like, are you okay? Cause I was like, it's him.
Right.
He's a stranger. Well, get the bat, dude. They're going to die. Like, what the fuck? What are we doing?
I'm like, you're the stranger. Go get him. You know, and damn if he didn't go lay the smack down.
Well, he hit that white woman. Boy, he hit that white woman. I said, with the strength of Bill Burr's monologue, he hit that white woman so good, boy.
That's so, like the part.
So beautiful.
That's like the part in Django where Jamie Foxx is killing. I used to do a bit where I say, damn, Jamie Foxx killed so many white people that I got nervous. I was like, oh my God, I'm getting this on Blu-ray, but God damn, Jamie.
Yeah. He was like, say goodbye to Miss, what's her name?
Bam!
Yeah,
I love that episode. Uh-huh. That's my favorite. The first episode, because it surpassed everything that I had in my mind. I was like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
You know, so that first episode hooked me completely. A third episode, I don't know if I have
I think it's episode 6.
I don't know if which one is that?
You and me and Daegu. Daegu.
Yes.
That was a good one too. That reminded me of Watchmen in a way too. The episode where they kind of return back to her childhood. I like that. That departure episode where you're taking a departure from what you've been telling us, which gives the main storyline time to marinate, but then you're also adding these threads that come back into the final episode. And I just thought that was brilliant writing.
I thought it was fantastic. Like I got Meet Me in Daegu and I got Jigabobo and I got, number 9. I got also have Tulsa. It's just, I would say.
Yeah. Let me speak on Meet Me in Daegu for a second. I think it was such a departure from what we were seeing that, there's only been a couple of shows that I've seen something like that. As Rod was saying, the Watchmen show, which was it hewed closely to, but also in an episode, remember that show that I know we're not supposed to say his name, but that miniseries that Louis put together with the Horace and Pete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a scene in that, there's an episode in that where it's his ex-wife talking, and you come into the scene, you have no idea what's happening and what is this about? How does this relate to this and what's going on? And then it ties back to it.
Yeah.
Through mm-hmm. That's how I felt watching it. You know, I like episodes like that, kind of dropped into the middle of a series. You mm-hmm. drop it into the middle and it ties back, and it was obviously very important to the show.
And you know what I mean? Like,
it also answered a few questions that we had, like, who is this woman that keeps calling him? What the fuck is that about?
You and know? Seeing Jamie Chung get a chance to act as a lead in a major series in a major role like that, just like, it was such a bold choice. And that's a person that so many people just know from like The Real World, you know what I mean. So like, she sees that. I read an interview with her after that aired, and she was like, after doing that, it made me want to be a leading actress. Like,
yeah,
and she should be, because she's fucking hot.
Yeah.
Well, that don't hurt.
But obviously
she's easy on the eyes.
obviously she can act and she's talented.
Right.
But when you think about a movie star, it's like, what the fuck are we doing?
Oh, I mean,
she so flawlessly picked up the right. role and carried the character. It's just
and thinking about the complexity of that role, because you're a monster playing a human. So like, you're not even really like, and she played it that way, like you never really feel like G is quite human. She's just almost there, you know what I mean? Like that joint, and just the amount of acting she was able to do, and the fact that you would give somebody a spotlight like that, because that's a huge risk, right? You got all these people that are coming to the show for this blackness and for the fact that it's a AAA title, and then you're like, yeah, we're just gonna take an episode where the blackness isn't the point, you know what I mean? Like Tick's in the episode, but Tick's in the background of that episode. That's her show, that's her episode. And and it's like, so who are we gonna put in this role? You might know it from The Real World, you know what I'm saying? And she fucking nailed it. It's such a great episode, and it just showed you the talent behind the scenes too, as well as in front of the camera.
Right.
Yeah.
What did I want to say about that? What else? I really like that episode, and I think that that's where things kind of ramped up, and it's kind of like, I always appreciated J.J. Abrams, even though he's, you know, kind of in the background of this, but what I liked about Lost, even though everybody has had issues, I have issues with it myself, but one thing he did do was he gave you good characters that you could care about, that when they're in these perilous supernatural situations, it's grounded, and it's grounded in something that's tactile, and then you can root for these characters.
Yeah.
What I thought was interesting about Tick, you know, and then maybe some of the critique I've read and heard, I want you guys to talk about is the thing, which I just didn't know about, is Tick trash?
Mm-hmm.
But I like the way that his character was established, because he has that dream and he wants to be the hero. You eventually see him stepping into that role, albeit reluctantly in some regard.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the Christ-like figure, I'm making air quotes. But that line that he says, you know, when he's talking about, he's telling the woman that he's on the bus with, you know, the character is flawed, but you can still appreciate that character and you can enjoy the story. I think that sets up every character.
The point, the entire point of Tick and that first conversation where they're talking about John Carter, and he says he's a Confederate hero, and the woman's like, well, how the fuck are you rooting for the Confederate hero? And the point of that is the freedom that whiteness is allowed, right? You can still be the hero and be flawed. Black people don't get that. The black hero gotta be aces, honorable, integrity, make the right choice, the impossible choice every time. And so Misha Green and them was like, nah, let's make the flawed hero. Let's make the guy that killed people in Korea, you know, the hero. Let's make the guy that acted like Future when Gia showed up saying that, what about our love? You know, let's make that dude complicated. Let's make him have integrity, but also fall short of it. Let's make him a victim of abuse and also a person that's trying to resist the violent tendencies that abuse leaves you. You know what I'm saying? So like, to me, I mean, you could call them trash, sure. If you're one of those people that just like calling dudes trash, then of course all the dudes are trash, right? But I mean, but the thing that's weird to me is to single him out as the trash in the show where every single character had something that was super fucked up about them. Everyone, even George. Like everyone loved Uncle George. Uncle George had a secret son. He never told about that shit his whole life. Yeah. Like everybody got some shit about them. You know what I mean? And singling out Tick just felt like, you know, that Twitter gender war shit where, you know,
I'm gonna tell you like this. I don't see anything. You're really reaching if you're finding something wrong with Tick. I didn't see nothing wrong with Tick. I agree with you, Rod. I'm like,
I didn't either.
If you're finding something wrong, well, what are you finding wrong with Tick? He killed some people in war. It was war. Yeah. So I don't.
I can get finding the character to flaw. I can get it because to me it's like John Carter was a Confederate sergeant. So that to me, if you just told me that on paper, I'm like, no, nigga, it's nothing he could do that'll make me root for him. But then if I'm reading that book and I'm like, damn, now he's saving Mars. Well, now he's kind of on the other side of this conflict. Okay, well, now I do want him to win. And I'm like, black people just don't get to be that. We have to either be fucking perfect or we have to be the bad guy. No, you never get to be there was times where Tick was selfish. You know, there was times where Tick gets violent and it's almost out of control. You know, that's obviously when he shoots the woman who's a nurse who's essentially innocent. Like, we know that woman wasn't the spy. You know, I get all of that shit, and I get why he was justified in the moment, and I also get how objectively you're like, well, I don't like to see a hero do that, right? It's the thing that I talk about on our show sometimes. I don't like watching a lot of time traveling shit with white dudes as the main character because they always try to make the white dude too special, right? Mm-hmm. It's like if you watch Sleepy Hollow, these motherfuckers go back to the 1800s or whatever, and Ichabod Crane, the one white man that's not down with slavery. I'm like, why'd y'all do that? You don't actually have to do that for me to understand that in 2015 he would understand that was wrong. But in 1800,
but they're not doing it for you. They're not doing it for you.
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Themselves to make themselves feel better.
Exactly.
I love Ichabod Crane. So therefore, he would have walked up to someone
beating a slave and grabbed their arm and said, "These niggas are people." And I'm like, we actually don't need that, bro, because I know that's not how slavery happened. You know what I'm saying? Just walked by and said, man, this is a shame what he's doing to them slaves, and you kept buying your groceries.
Yeah. You didn't even do that. You walked by and said, that slave must have did something.
Yeah. Hey, John, beating your slaves? Oh, I'll see you. Hey, have a good one. See you at church. You know? Yeah.
That's what you did, you know?
So I like that. I like that they unflinchingly said, yeah, Tick did some things that essentially will be a war crime. Right. But war is hell. And also them skills came to use.
And I like in that episode. And then to me though, like I always like Tick is our hero.
Yeah.
But I thought that Letty was kind of his equal.
I think Letty is more of the hero in this story, even though he makes the bigger sacrifice, obviously.
Right.
I thought what was funny is they wrote Letty like she came from 2020 and jumped back in time. Cause like, she didn't have, like, she, her clothing was like shit women wear now. Her fucking, she was like hot rodding cars and fucking like she cussed George ass out. Letitia fucking Lewis. Like, she was just a whole different type of hero in this joint. So if there was any pandering or whatever, I would say like maybe Letitia's, that character got more of the like wink wink, like, we know what y'all want to see type of treatment, but Tick didn't get all that.
Yeah, I really appreciated that episode. Like, and then just listening to that podcast, them talking about how she was trying to learn how to be a human with the Whistler Wizard of Oz girl.
Oh my God. Dorothy?
Dorothy, but
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Renee Zellweger played it. Oh my God, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Juliette Lewis, was that it?
No.
Shit, you know I don't know. Y'all on your own.
We should know this shit. It's like oh my God. I'm so, I had a long day. The little girl, I'll edit this out.
The little black girl?
Julie Garland.
Okay. Yeah, that's
oh.
like she was learning how to be, like, with Tick and her friend, she was learning how to be a human, but then she was trying to be like Judy Garland, and Judy Garland was a child star, mm-hmm. that just got really fucked up. Like,
yeah, had abusive, the other thing that was interesting about that though, she wasn't necessarily trying to learn how to be a human as much as learning how to be this honeypot, to be she was learning to be a better trap to kill 200 souls. So somewhere along that line though, she ends up, I think it's when she meets
I would say actually you have to think about this is she's absorbing humanity every time she kills a person.
Right.
So if you absorb, you know, X amount of number of souls, you're gonna at some point have to take on the traits of those people. She's mm-hmm. pulling their memories and stuff like that. So you're also absorbing their feelings, their thoughts. You're absorbing their humanity into you. That mm-hmm. has to change you at some point.
Well,
Maybe that's also a metaphor for the racism that
I think when she experienced genuine kindness from her coworker, that was it. That was it. Because that was different than just the dudes that wanted to fuck. Cause she even said, like, the souls I absorbed of the men, they was just evil. Like, she was like, all the men were bad men. So I'm like, say what?
Those guys are trash.
Yeah, she was like, they're, men are trash. All 199 of these niggas was trash. And so, like, she seemed to, like, it seemed, what fucked up her programming, it seems, was Tick and young, I want to say it's young, her coworker and Tick fucked her up because they genuinely cared for her and weren't trying to game her, get something from her. And she wasn't ready for that, dog. If it wouldn't been for them two, man, sold 200, she would have been up out of here.
Yeah.
What's that thing of learning? It's that thing of when you learn stuff, you change, man. It changes you. It changes you what you are. It changes who you are and what you are. And that's what happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she ended up being changed going from being this demon and becoming a human. You got to take on all parts of being a human. And one of those is the feelings that are inside of you, the feelings for Tick that she now had.
Right.
You notice that she was at the very end of almost the transformation.
Yeah. Right.
Is when she starts falling for these people at the very end of the transformation, as far as we know. Right. But I'm going to go.
And it sounded interesting because she said, when she talked about her mother dying, and how she had these feelings, and she was like, oh, okay, I've become a human. But then the feelings started going away, and it was like, oh wait, that's just being human too. The feelings do come in waves. Yes. She just didn't understand, bro. She just never been through that shit.
It's
because she didn't, it's like you said, she didn't understand it.
Yeah.
You know? She didn't understand her humanity yet.
It's interesting, because it's like one last heist. Mm-hmm. Her one last heist, and then Tick steals her heart.
Yeah. Yep. she took his virginity and he stole her heart.
So took his virginity well.
Shout out to Uncle George with the first motherfucking bootleg though. Cause that's what won it over. He had that Judy Garland movie in there from overseas. I don't know how Uncle George hooked that one up, boy, but that's when, hey, look, the panties slid down, boy. She said, you know what, I'm gonna put these tails away. I'm gonna go ahead and bless you, little man.
I'm gonna go ahead and knock you down some.
Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna let this happen.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about Ruby for a bit?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I really appreciated that character. What are your thoughts, Randolph?
I thought she was flawed also. She was caught in her resentment of her sister.
Mm-hmm.
She was caught in her own resentment. And it was almost a trap for her. Now, from what we know, she was shaking it off,
mm-hmm.
you know, towards the end. At least that's what, you know, that's what homegirl said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she tried to betray me, so I killed her, you know, as far as we know. But, you know, she was caught up in the resentment of Letty, of whatever it is that Letty, the interaction between Letty and her mother, but the interaction between Letty and her. She was letting that, she had let that resentment, and maybe it was well earned. We don't know exactly what the relationship between the two of them was, but we know it wasn't good.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was, but I know she was sitting and she had been brewing in that resentment for a long time, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, I think she was flawed as well, man. I think, there were some interesting elements to Ruby that I think people missed. And once again, you know, watching the show with agendas, you go into the void. Like, I need these things to happen. Like, I saw people try to throw like a colorism angle in there, which I think is a little bit of a flawed angle, because not that it's that colorism isn't real, but I think within the context of what this TV show was trying to show you, it wasn't like the main point of her character, you know.
It's possible, it's
right,
possible,
definitely, but it's possible,
easy, though.
We never saw any aspects of that. And this show being the show that it was, they would have said
it. I think they would have said it. Exactly. So.
I don't believe it.
She was, there were other, and then another thing people were trying to say, like, well, you know, she's bigger than Letty and, you know, traditional attractive. I was like, bruh, every time you saw her, right, and every time you saw her on screen, no one had a problem being like, hello, what is going on over there?
She is hot.
Right. Yeah.
That's not how our community works.
Right.
Man. Come on.
Right. Well, I think when you walk into the show with your own agendas, then you're not going to let the show tell the story it wants to tell. You're going to be like, and to me, it's a weird form of, anti-blackness in a way to walk in and be like, this woman is just a dark skinned, fat woman, and therefore her storyline is some woe is me type of, and I'm like, that, so why does it have to be that? Because if you're trying to make this show where you're kind of having escapism in it, why the fuck would I write that into the show? And you really can't win for losing, because I also watched Pose, and when the dark-skinned trans woman died on that, they was like, well, how come that she gotta die? And it's like, but y'all also would have said it's unrealistic that, you know, mm-hmm. these women, they mm-hmm. need their stories told, and dark-skinned trans women die all the time, and y'all don't talk about it. So, like, the artist can't win for losing, no matter how they depict the character.
Right.
But that being said, Ruby was very much on that talented 10th, bougie respectability
that W.E.B. Du Bois talented 10th. Yeah,
and they skipped right over that, and it was right in the script. Like, it was, so when she was at the party basically being like, I ain't like you other niggas, I'm gonna get a job, and then and she was always knocking Tick for not having a job. She knocked Letty for moving in all those artists and woke motherfuckers into the apartment. And like, her whole thing was like, if you get a job, it'll save you. She turned into a white woman, and the first thing she did was go get a fucking job. Like that.
Right.
And while that was freedom for, in her mind, she found out how not freeing it really was. And she was low key shocked how they shit on the black woman for just being black. She thought, well, if you were the right type of nigga, the white people will be like, yes, we appreciate your hard work, your credit to the community.
Message.
Right. But when she found out that they just don't like any black people, she was blown. Like, she was like, what the fuck? And these are the laziest white women. They in the back dancing and trying on shoes and shit. Like,
this is the South Side.
Yeah, like these, like the worst type of white women. And she, and so I thought that that character was flawed, but still ultimately like Tick, like Letty, like George, like Montrose, ultimately heroic, right? Because in the end, it's her WAP that saves everybody. Cause yeah, she laid that thing down on Christina enough for Christina to be like, I did promise not to kill your sister, and put the Mark of Cain on Letty. Right, so right, like, right. She still came true in the end. She tried to steal the formula. I mean, potion. That's so
She went in and tried to get some blood.
Right.
You know, Christina killed her, which, you know, Christina being killed, which is yet another little message. Mm-hmm. Listen, you can trust these white ladies if you want to.
Say what you said, Rod. But, say what you said about her.
Oh, Christina might be the most 53% character I've ever seen on
Absolutely.
TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like in anything. I've been thinking about it. Like, not even Mad Men had women that was more 53% than Christina. No. Cause Christina would literally sell you, a black person, she would sell you on, listen, these white men is trash and we need to overcome this. It was the Bill Burr Gucci boot, like it was literally
Gucci boot over the fence.
Bruh, it was literally that. She, cause anytime she talked to these black people and they start being like, no, what's going on with this? What's in it for us? She'd be like, these white men, they don't got no imagination. They trash. They bought, and it's like, well, they are trash. You know, okay, sis, I see where you coming from. And then as soon as you put it on some black shit, she'd be like, no, hold up. Why y'all making this into a race thing? This ain't got nothing to do with that. Okay. I just want to kill your homie and take the book. I don't, why y'all taking it personal?
She ain't even used her magic. She just gaslighted.
Yeah. Her magic was gaslighting and shit.
Wow. Yeah. She was
the ultimate power.
Yeah.
ultimate power.
What did you think about her, the Emmett Till scene where she Craigslisted those dudes to, killer.
Bro, the way they did that scene.
Mm-hmm. I liked the power of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand quite what was happening, but I was like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I liked the power of the scene.
For me,
I was like, I guess that was her baptism into her power. That was putting a religious touch on it. I was like, I guess that's her baptism. You got to take this ass whooping, go under the water, come back up. Maybe a little bit of Jesus story on her side. Maybe. Mm-hmm.
I took that scene in two different ways. The first being, she cared for Letty enough. I mean, for Ruby enough to be curious enough to want to find out. Because, and she was curious, keep in mind, because she was the one that remembered the details of how Emmett Till died. She was, when they was arguing, she brought up like, yeah, and I didn't care. And so she went to be like, okay, let me experience this pain. And why can't Ruby not relate to this pain? Like, why can't Ruby just, she's living in my house, eating up my snacks, living great. What the fuck is she worried about this nigga for that she ain't got no relation to, right? So that was the one part of it. The second part of it, and this is why I thought the shit went so hard and why I have nothing but applause for Misha Green and them. I was like, if she comes out of this and she now has a more thorough understanding of the oppression that black people experience, then it has to change her character, right? Like that character then has to look and be like, I can't just kill Tick to get what I want. Because you will have experienced the trauma of that and be like, nah, black life is precious, blah, blah, blah. Mm-mm. Cause you can take it the other way, which is I experienced that shit and I still don't give a fuck. To me, that's the evilest you can be, bruh. Like, it's nothing more evil than you went through that shit and you came out of it and was like, I'm still gonna do my plan. I was like, oh, like from that point, cause I'm, in the, Twitter and Facebook and online world, there were some people that thought that Christina was either like a misunderstood, tragic villain.
Oh, no.
But I said, bro,
there's nothing tragic about her.
Yeah, like maybe you could have been conflicted, but at first because she was like, you know, my father did this and, you know, and these men are boxing me out and, you know, they don't understand. Bruh, after she did that and she comes out of it and goes, I'm still going to do my plan. There's no sympathy. There's no, like, she needed to die. That would have been the only loose end, is that they would have left her alive. And shout out to D, they didn't.
You know, I kind of want to go on a tangent that you brought up, something that I really appreciated on Twitter, It's about the show that comes on after this one. Mm-hmm. The Vow.
What is that?
The Vow. You know about
I have not. I have not. I'm going to be honest.
Mm.
That's white folks running around, right? I don't want to see it, man.
No, I get it, Randolph.
I'm not watching this. Especially after this shit I just watched. I'm not watching this.
I know.
I can't go from that to this. That won't work, man.
But it's a whole lot. And we'll go back. But I just appreciate what Rod said because it's like that show could have been maybe 2 or 3 episodes.
Yeah.
5 at the most.
They made it 9.
That's the cult documentary.
Yeah.
I think it kind of pairs with what you just said about Christina, because it's like, okay, you want to have, they built up these 9 episodes and they buried the lead like at episode maybe 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, they wanted us, you talked about like, the producers wanted us to have
empathy
for these white people
that were complicit.
Yeah.
They wanted us, like, you can't let the motherfucker that's complicit make the doc. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, I need an objective third party person to come in here and be like, this nigga was trash. This nigga was trash. This,
yeah.
Like, they tried to do it on some like, listen, the main dude, he's the one that was trash and he used all the rest of us. And you know, I started watching on Stars, they have a documentary on the same cult called it's called Seduced. Yeah, Seduced.
Is it good?
It's only one episode in, it's already better. It's already 10 times better. It's only gonna be 4 episodes. So right there, the pacing issue is fixed right there. Like, cause the shit should have never been 9 hours, dude. Like that Vow documentary, it showed these motherfuckers like waking up in the morning, drinking coffee, eating a Danish.
Rich as a motherfucker.
Reading the paper. Bruh, do you know Chris? I know y'all don't hear the stuff behind the paywall, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it here too. Here's what I understand about the Vow. Why the fuck did no one just shoot this man?
I saw you post that somewhere and I was like, white.
Were they some of them were dickmatized?
I mean, they were that rich and white, but like one of the dudes, his wife got a brand on her pussy.
Yep.
And this dude was like, you know, I was very upset to hear that. And you know, I said, Keith, you need to explain this. I need to talk to you, buddy. I'm like, bro, I watched this whole documentary. At no point did I see a fucking security guard. And I was looking. You know what I mean? I was like, so do they got like some, cause you know, cults, man, normally they get some people with some guns and shit, and then that's how they get you, right?
Yeah.
There's some people with some guns, and then the motherfuckers with the guns, it's like, well, we can't just run up on the cult leader cause the people with the guns. Not one gun, Chris. They was suing people. That's how they was, we gonna sue you. Bro, if you sue me for everything I got and I didn't do nothing but leave your cult, I promise you, you're gonna see me. You know what I mean? You're not just going to Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You're not just doing that, bro. Like, I was so fucking disgusted with these white people. It took me to like episode 8 to be like, when's the episode where y'all just ran up on them? They had a fucking staff meeting with like 13 women. Some of these women have been his sex slave and shit. And he was up there basically just, you know, like, listen, y'all bitches tripping. Y'all need to just go ahead. I don't admit nothing. I didn't do nothing wrong. Suck my dick. It's fucking 9 of y'all right there. Whoop his ass.
See, this is why I'm not watching this bullshit, man.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get Rod's take on it on wax. I just wanted to get
He's 5'2", Randolph. You know what I'm saying?
And he's a cult leader at
imagine your wife comes home, I branded my vagina for this dude. You're not gonna see him. I mean, one, you're probably getting divorced, but let's say y'all do stay together by some miracle. You're not gonna see this dude in the streets, man. Come on, man.
What I don't understand is what dynamic personality does a 5'2" man have?
Bruh.
I don't like the short shame, but come on.
Trash. He was so fucking dog. That's why it's so long though, Randolph. He's so fucked up and so uncharismatic and shit. They have to do 9 episodes of them telling you like he was the greatest. He was so smart. He was a scientist. He had all the words.
So I got to sit in my house and be like, no, he wasn't.
Right.
No, he wasn't.
That's me. Every episode, I'm like, nah. I'm not letting this dude fuck me or my wife or anyone I know. No, we're going to whoop his ass. He had a powerful team of lawyers. Did he have a powerful team of fucking bodyguards? Cause I will whoop his motherfucking ass, dude. I couldn't believe this shit, man. I'm incensed over this shit, bro. They wasted 9 hours of my life trying to explain that bullshit, bro. He's a fucking uncharismatic short cult leader that looked weird. This nigga was out there fucking in volleyball shorts holding court telling these motherfuckers like, this how I'm gonna be fucking y'all. No the fuck you not, bro.
Just kissing on white girls, kissing on
kissing them on the mouth. He was kissing people's wife on the mouth, and nobody said shit.
So I'm telling you, man, so I don't watch this bullshit. I knew it was gonna be like this. I'm like, I ain't watching this shit.
It's infuriating, dude. They show like two black people in the cult and shit.
Yeah.
I was like, none of y'all whooped his ass. They must not have got fucked, bro. Cause I would have whooped his ass, dog. Straight up.
Man, look, just give me my black fantasy.
But I just wanted to talk about that. It's just like we can have like black audience members. We always have to have empathy or can, you know, humanize other characters that we see on screen. But it's hard. Sometimes it seems hard for white people to make that leap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just
that's the story of everything. That's the story of our society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no empathy towards us at all. Period.
Yep.
And it's like
because you can't visualize my daughter as your child.
Exactly.
You can't see me as your brother, even though your religion and your God tells you that you have to.
Yep.
You can't. You still can't do it.
And that's why that Emmett Till scene was so dope to me.
Yeah.
Cause right. It meant she went through that and still couldn't see it. And if that ain't message, if that ain't a yeah. message for us, yeah. if that ain't the reason D said they'll never learn, then right. you missed the whole point of the fucking show, dog. It's right there in your face. Like, listen, you will never, Christina, you can't appeal to her. She'll never get it. You gotta just kill this motherfucker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think I just got pissed off by a lot of the criticism of the show, and it's like for the life of me, I can't see why people don't seem to get it. Like Mos Def has this record I talked about a month ago on the show called All Praise Due, and he talked about like the ancestors who screamed and cried. I know that my life is better because you weathered the tide. That's that shit. Like this show is saying that we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. It's that, it's that fucking t-shirt. Every episode is that. And it's the unlikely hero, the flawed people that come to this realization that I need to step into that role. Everything that I've dreamed of, I have the chance of becoming that. And moving the baton forward, how can you be afraid of that?
You hear that twice.
You hear that from great grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from Tick's grandmother. Was it Tick's grandmother who told Letty that?
Yeah.
Was that his grandmother? That was his grandmother. Or
that would have been his great grandmother. It was Hattie.
Great grands, great. I know that the timeline started fucking with me. Yeah. I was like, now which one is this woman? You know, I know she's related to him, but I don't know what the actual. I guess that's his great grandmother. Yeah, it was the. You know that baby is my. I can't remember the exact line, but it was such a beautiful line. You know, that baby in you is my basically my hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So we heard it there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we heard it from Tick's mother, from his mother herself. Is that how can you not take on this burden?
You don't have a choice. She said, I didn't have a choice with Montrose. I didn't have a choice with George. And she said, sometimes we think we have choices and we don't, you know?
No, right.
How can you survive the trauma that was done to black people and come out unblemished, unflawed, no trauma? Right. Like the whole idea is flawed. You know what I'm saying? To try to be like, these black people need to be perfect in 1950. Man, suck my dick. Like, people not perfect now. It's 2020 and people still flawed, man. There's no perfect people. And I love a show that shows you that these people aren't perfect. And the other times that it brought up too, Randolph, was the fact that his son wrote the book that ends up telling them, basically giving them clues on how to defeat this white woman. It also comes up when he fucking saves his family in Tulsa, literally. It was the fact that they persevered and that literally came back to save them in that moment of peril. It's fucking the show, the levels to the show, bro. Like, it's just, I mean, like, it had a couple, they was using the Terminator paradox of time travel. Like, it was a lot of, like, because we did time travel, this shit happened. But did it happen because we did time travel, or did it happen because we knew? You know what I'm saying? So, like, they had a few of those moments, but that shit didn't bother me at all. Like, once again, black nerd, I've been through this, okay? I know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know. I've seen that.
Yeah.
So that's not nothing that's, if anything, I'm like, well, yeah, I get it. I mean, if you watch Back to the Future, you understand time traveling paradoxes.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? And you can't fuck with it when you go back.
But they always do end up fucking with something. It's like, it's that rule that's always broken in every time travel thing. Like, in Terminator, it was like, they found the T-100's arm, and that's what made them build Skynet. But they came back because Skynet was about to kill all the humans, so they created time travel to come back. It's a paradox. You know what I mean? Like one thing couldn't happen without the other, but at the same time, one thing shouldn't happen without the other happening. Right. So it's, you know, so for me, that kind of shit, old hat, bro. I don't need to explain it. I'm already been through this. Let's go.
I feel like you guys will give me the because of slavery answer, but why, I want to hear what you think anyway, but why is it that we collectively have a hard time of, I don't know, letting go our suspension of disbelief? I didn't watch Game of Thrones, and I don't have anything against it. I know that you guys were big fans, but is it just because we see ourselves so blatantly in this, like, that we have a hard time of connecting or finding, or like kind of lashing out at this show with these medium pieces and these pieces that are for the white gaze, kind of? What is it? What do you guys think it is?
Oh, I got some theories, brother.
Okay.
I think we have a problem sometimes of just letting things be, and just experiencing things, because generally when we experience stuff, it don't go good for us. So there's always kind of a nature of, What the fuck is this? And what is this? Why is this? What is this happening? You know, just from a feeling of being unsafe, which again goes back to slavery. If you live in an unstable world, fantasy is not something you're going to be fucking with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Now, people will tell you, well, I need to read fantasy to escape. You read fantasy to escape boredom. You know, you read fantasy to escape monotony and mundane stuff. You don't read fantasy to get away from stuff when shit is out of control, when you feel like you're at the mercy of things around you. You don't fuck with it. Before, I got enough stuff that's off kilter around me. I don't need to fuck with that. That's just me talking. I may be wrong, but I've kind of felt that for a while now, because there's not a lot of us that really fuck with fantasy. We should. I think it's healthy. I think it's very healthy to engage that part of your mind. It helps you see things, and it helps you see your reality in a new light. You know, I've always felt that. I would hope that after experiences like this, that we begin to engage a little bit more on some level. I would hope. I'd like to see, like I said earlier, I'd like to see more of this. But I want for us to experience more of this. Not so much I just want to see more of it. I want us to be open to experiencing more of this and not having to destroy it and tear it down and look for the flaws in it and try to find things. No, just let it be. Some of it's going to be bad, but that's okay. You know, some episodes are going to be bad. There's going to be some problems, and that's fine. But experience it. I don't know how you feel about it, Rod, but I know I've been kind of, haven't been able to narrow to lock it down in my mind, but I know that it's just a general feeling I've been having about fantasy and yeah. as it relates to black people.
Yeah, I think there's no way to bring this up without insulting some people, so they're just gonna have to be insulted. But I think a lot of what people define as black fanhood of shit is just complaining, because we've been done wrong so many fucking times that we always have something to complain about. So for a lot of it, I remember one time on Twitter, I got added to this blur. It was back when Twitter allowed people to add you to a direct message chain without your permission. And so somebody added me to this direct message chain of blurs who wanted to talk about, you know, nerd shit all day, right? And bro, I've never opted out of something so fucking fast, bro. It was just complaining about everything. Yeah. There was no right answer, right? It was so they gonna give us Black Panther, but why don't they give us our own Black Superman? And then somebody be like, oh, have you heard about the new Black Superman movie? And they be like, man, fuck that shit. Make a new hero that ain't got nothing to do with Superman. I don't want the white hero leftovers. It's like, okay, they just came up with Static Shock. That's very, oh man, I don't want no Static Shock. It's just like, oh, y'all niggas gonna complain about anything. So you got,
just want to complain.
Right, which is a subset of nerd culture already. A lot of nerd culture is just white people complaining about nerd shit, and then we end up emulating that shit, and I don't like it. So that's number one. The number two thing is, like I said, no way to say this without insulting these people, but these motherfuckers write for white people. They're writing. You're accusing the show of working to the white gaze while writing to white people. And the reason I know you write for white people is because you never say I. Because there's a difference between saying I and a difference between saying black people. Like, so if you want to say, listen, I don't like Lovecraft Country because I ain't into that shit. Got you. No hard, no foul. If you want to say, I don't like Lovecraft Country because it's doing black people a disservice, and as black people, we feel this way, hey man, speak for your fucking self. Yeah. I ain't no coon, and I fucking love the show, and I ain't no fucking, you know, I'm not no sellout. So, like, if we gotta have some type of fucking Black Olympics or some shit to prove my blackness, then I guess we gotta do that, because I'm just as intelligent as you, and I found positive things in this show where you claimed there were none. So why are you even writing from that perspective? Why not just say you didn't like it? You know, why did you feel the need to try to take it down for your white audience in the first fucking place? Cause that's who be reading that shit. White people and other nigga nerds that fucking, that worry about white people all goddamn day. You know? Right. So that's one of the main things I don't like it. And then the last thing I'll say is this. I call it the scarcity paradigm. We used to exist in a world where there was a black TV show, you know, at most say three black TV shows on at any given time, you know. It's like Cosby and Cosby begets Family Matters, and Family Matters begets Martin, and Martin and Living Single come on at the same time for a little bit, and then, you know, but it was never really like a lot of big budget black shows. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe we would get some of the I forget what they were called before the CW, but you know, WB. Yeah, we get like some WB. Like we'll get some of those joints, you know what I'm saying? Like some, what they really did, we had super talented people getting low budgets and making miracles every week. But we don't get like shit like this, where it's like, here's a very black story. Let's give you a AAA budget. Y'all go do whatever y'all want to do. We don't get that.
But now, we
got it all over the fucking place. Like every streaming service got some high profile black shit. Every fucking cable channel got some high profile black shit. If you don't like this shit, it's perfectly fine to say you don't like it without turning it into some sort of like representation of blackness. You can just say I didn't like it. But I do like P-Valley, or I do like fucking Insecure. What happened to that? Why is that not a fucking option? Why do you need to turn to your white audience and go, it's not good, guys. You don't have to like it either. Suck my motherfucking dick, man. Like, I'm tired of that shit. So that's the thing that bothered me about a lot of these critiques, was just, it's still you kind of worried about the white gaze. What are white people going to think? Are they going to get the wrong messages from watching Lovecraft Country? Hey, man, fuck them. I'm getting the right messages. What about me and my opinion?
Let them give whatever messages they're gonna get. Who cares?
Yeah, why do we care so fucking much?
Let them feel how they feel.
We already spent the money.
And that's all that's important is how I feel. Can you let how I feel be important?
The money's already spent. You see what I'm saying? The money gone, bruh. It's over. Let them enjoy that. I don't know why they've always want to take somebody down, man. That shit was just, so yeah, that's where I was coming from. I think that's the pressure on these people. I mean, they do need to write something every week. They are the quote unquote black TM writers. So that means any black thing, they have to have an opinion. They can't ever just be like, I write for the Undefeated. I'm the pop culture critic. And guys, I just don't have an opinion on this one because I'm not going to watch it. They can never say that. They have to be like, I watched it, and story accounting. I'm coming up with a new thing to shit on this. I've never talked about this concept before in my life. Today, I've invented a new reason why we can't like this show. Like, that's bullshit to me.
Yeah, I think you guys gave me a vocabulary because I was trying to figure out, what is this? It's okay to not like something, but it's like, why so serious? Why so hard on a genre that's pulp, that is, I don't know. Is it? Yeah.
There's black shit that I don't give a chance all the time, bro. You never hear me talk about it.
Yeah.
I never talk about those shows on purpose. It's not on some, like, I'm doing them a favor. It's just like, I don't talk about white shows I don't watch on purpose because who the fuck got time to talk the shit on shows? It's too much shit. I can't keep up with what I do like.
Yeah.
So you make a very special column to shit on this, bro. It's just super disappointing, man.
To shit on it specifically.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Specifically, I'm gonna shit on this.
And it wouldn't bother me if these same motherfuckers wouldn't wait to every award season and be mad when Misha Green doesn't win that fucking award. You know, they're going to be mad when motherfucking Journey Smollett doesn't win. They're going to be mad when Jonathan Majors doesn't win. Man, suck. You are the problem. You know what I mean? Like, you erode the goodwill of these things just so you can bitch about them later and be like, you know, they gave another award to Julia Louis-Dreyfus or whatever fucking name it is. They gave another award to a white woman. I'm like, you shit on the black things. You know that there's other black shit out there besides just the black shit you like. You don't have to try to take it down to prove something. Because if anyone is selling their blackness, it's you. You write this shit from the point of, I speak for the blacks. No, that's the fucking point. That's the whole problem. Stop trying to speak for all of us. Speak for you. You know what I mean? If you speak for you, it'll become universal. But if you just try to speak for me, the black person who's also exists, and then we're not a monolith, and telling white people how we should feel, then, man, now you're making the shit way more adversarial than it needs to be. So I wish they would have rewrote those pieces. First of all, they should write apology pieces because they were wrong. But then second of all, they should write those same pieces and be like, I don't like it. I don't like it. It didn't do anything for black people. It didn't hurt anybody. I just am not a fan.
Yeah. And, let me just say, I co-sign everything Roger said. I'm awfully tired of that. That now is a paid position. That's a paid position now in our culture. The black person who shits on black stuff. That's somebody's making money behind that. It's like a paint by numbers shit now. It's like, hey, this new black thing is going to come out. I'm going to shit on each aspect of it. I'm going to shit on each character of it. And I'm going to write this just for white people to make white people feel better about it so that they too can then turn around and shit.
And they don't
and
have.
I'm gonna and get paid,
and
I'm
you
gonna
ever get paid to do. You ever notice the shit that they do like? They never have to put it through that same thing. Because the thing that got me with Watchmen, it's funny how on paper, all of the wokes would have never approved Watchmen.
Right.
It only became a thing because it was already done when it was presented to them. If they would have just said, but in the planning stages, here's what we're thinking of doing: we're gonna take the third iteration of a Watchmen property. We'll take that now in 2018, 2019, whatever. we're gonna have a white man who made Lost be the showrunner and produce all this shit. And it's gonna be about racism in America, but in a post, in a futuristic society where, there's a secret, underground network of white supremacists, and this black woman cop is gonna be the one who's fighting against it. Man, they would have been every hashtag boycott, Watchmen, hashtag cancel Damon Lindelof. Why y'all white people think they can do this? But since they got smart, cause I think that Confederate shit made them smarten up, they just didn't tell nobody shit until it was done. And then they were like, you like Regina King, don't you? And you know what? We do like Regina King.
Yeah, we do.
And we will watch your shit. And you know, we will give it a chance. And if it's good, we'll give it credit if it's good. Cause that's how you should do it, man. So that's what bothered me, was like, the same Watchmen that you're using as the litmus test for this show is the one that you would have said shouldn't have been made. So like, you're not gonna catch me like, give the black people the same credit and slack and benefit of the doubt that you gave these motherfucking, give the black people that. Cause you gave the white people that shit. They let Damon Lindelof finish his whole fucking story before they started going in. Like they went halfway through this and was like, fuck Misha Green. And I guarantee you, we'll be mad when they get the announcement it's not renewed. Or if they get the announcement that it didn't win any awards or get nominated. They will play mad. And it makes me feel like they some fake fucks.
How about this? How about when the girl who plays Christina gets nominated and nobody black does?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait till that shit happens.
Let that happen. Watch them same people that wrote them hit pieces be on there like, this is a travesty of justice. Hashtag Hollywood so white. Man, get the fuck out my face.
Yeah.
Wait till that happens. Her character was so complex.
Right. They don't have any foresight, man. It's like when Ava DuVernay didn't wish death on Trump, and then these motherfuckers basically like, fuck Ava DuVernay. I'm like,
good ass Ava DuVernay, that's what she's gonna do, that's what you want,
right?
To do, really,
like, yeah. you can disagree and still not be like, fuck her, all she does is profit off of black pain, she's a capitalist, but I'm like, y'all always go too fucking far.
Yeah, how are you not with Ava DuVernay just going, well, that's kind of what I would expect out of Ava.
I would expect it. We all got an Ava DuVernay. Right, we all got an Ava DuVernay aunt. We all got one.
Yeah.
Were you like?
That's what I expect. Very nice. I expect that. Yeah.
So, right. And I want to end it on this, I guess, but like, and then your final thoughts. But does black trauma just fall under that umbrella too of just complaining or just using that as a weapon?
Here's the thing.
Here's the thing.
So, I'm not one to try to like downplay the idea that black trauma can be triggering for people and shit. I'm not. Now I'm also not one of these people that's afraid of it. So keep that in mind, that I read a bunch of shit that's traumatic. I watch a bunch of shit that's supposed, you know, I get that we are human and we can be triggered. Okay.
Right.
But trauma is in art. It's part of the process. As an artist, if we take that off of the black palette, we are crippling our fucking artists. You know what I mean? It's the trick they tried to tell y'all as stand-up comedians. And I guarantee both of y'all have experienced it. I've never done stand-up, and I still guarantee you what this scenario y'all have both gone through. Some white dude tells you, don't go up there and talk too much about race. Garen fucking teeth.
What do you mean?
Some white dude that has never experienced racism, never lived a day in his life as a black person, is like, but don't go on that stage and use your personal experience. Go up there and use mine. Go up there and copy and be like me. But that is a paintbrush that in our easel. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have that thing. So I don't mind it when we use it. I think we should be able to use it. When Donald Glover made This Is America, and all these fucking think pieces, Chairman, it's like, shut the fuck up. This is America. Don't be out here marching for George Floyd and then tell me this video is too fucking triggering. Because what is he supposed to do as an artist? He didn't see Trayvon Martin get killed. He didn't see Eric Garner get choked out. He's not allowed to express that in his art because you're too sensitive. No, it happened.
I had a famous black guy tell me not to talk about race a lot.
Yeah, see,
I've had black people tell me that too.
If I wanted to book Montreal, I had to not talk about it.
If you want to get into these clubs, you got to not talk about race. What I would say about the trauma is, what I need people to understand is, look, everything is not black trauma.
Right.
You know, sometimes I feel like now we've got to the point that there are those of us who are simply hiding behind the words black trauma or trauma. Everything is not trauma. You understand what I'm saying? It's not for me to tell you what is and isn't trauma, but come on. Right. Everything is not trauma. Some things are just a story being told.
Yep.
Some things are a reality that we need to talk about because we don't get to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're wielding it around as a weapon to silence me, well, no.
Right.
And there are people who are doing that now. Mm-hmm. You use the words trauma as a weapon to silence people.
Yeah.
I'm not with that, you know. I'm not with telling stories just for the sake of telling ignorant stories. That was my problem with Confederate bullshit that they were thinking about doing. Like, why are you so invested in telling this story of the South won the Civil War and we have to, why are you so invested in that? White people, you keep wanting to tell this story. You've written these books. Why are you so invested in it? That's my problem. You know, if you're going to make it, go ahead, but don't tell me that, well, it's just about art. I'm like, no, you have another agenda there because you keep wanting to tell this story. The obvious better story to tell is, what happens if the black people had won the war, meaning Reconstruction had been allowed to work its course rather than being stopped after 8 years. That's the better story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? Because that changes America completely.
Yeah.
Completely. America is a completely different place. You know, so that's where I come from on stuff like that. You know, I don't like people just wielding around the word trauma because sometimes people are just saying it to silence people. You know?
Well, you know, I will say this.
Shut up.
I will say this. I do disagree slightly on Confederate because the plot was the war ends in a stalemate. And then we get to this future where this shit was never settled. And it's like, what the fuck do we do? And I get why people were upset by it, but my nigga, I feel like that's today. So I thought it could have had some interesting parallels to like, we never did solve, like, if anything, the biggest fiction in America is that we settled the Civil War and that the South lost.
Low key, the South really won.
Yeah, you know, it could have been some woke shit with the black writers and shit. Now, that being said, it never got made, so I didn't lose nothing. Like I think the HBO showrunners for Game of Thrones, those white dudes, were like the best hands to put this in anyway. I know it would have been a black couple that was gonna ultimately be the showrunners and they were gonna produce it, but I mean, they rolled that news out late. You know what I'm saying? I get why people are upset.
Yeah.
The point being though, black trauma is in the toolbox of the black artist. It belongs to us. I trust us when we tell it. I will at least give us a chance. Like, there's still black people that fuck it up. You know, I hear people that get upset about stuff like slave play and some of these other things. And so that's not saying every black person is flawless and all this type of shit. But just, I think we deserve the chance and more importantly, the benefit of the doubt when telling our stories. Because how many people fucking cried when they saw the first episode of Watchmen? How many people cried, dog? They were like, I've never seen this before. I didn't even learn this in school. I never would have thought this. Right. Because we've never got a chance to put this, because this is black trauma. And if we say you can't tell these stories, then we are really saying you can't tell the true history of America. And now we're talking about the 1619 project. Now we're talking about teaching kids in school about Tulsa. They just found more bodies in a grave in Tulsa this week. So like this week, that doesn't happen without that moment is my personal belief, or they find those bodies and it doesn't make the news because no one gives a fuck. So we need these moments, we need these stories. So I don't like the people that try to pretend that the only kind of black art you can make is this fake happy shit, or you got to make this like this, you know, this, like, we're running away from this, or every black protagonist needs to be like, no, I will not pick the cotton or whatever. Like, I don't need that shit in my life. Like, I want to see a variation of shit. We should be able to do that.
Yeah, somebody,
right.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna go into, but yeah, you guys are absolutely right. I think I wanna thank you guys for coming on and talking about this. This was basically my selfish podcast because I wanted to, you know, kind of get vocabulary about what the critiques about the show meant and something that I thought was just a brilliant show where it's just like,
I feel like it had to be done though, man. After all that shit we were reading and all the people that were coming, I feel like it had to be done.
Yeah.
You know,
I was like, we got to talk about this because I was listening to something yesterday. I was like, what the fuck?
Cause cause that was my main thing. I refuse to go back and forth with these people, man. So like,
right.
When I read that shit, I really just shake my head and be like, I'm super disappointed that you didn't get it and that you felt so empowered to go out and tell the world that they shouldn't get it either. But I'm not going to let that become the point of me watching this show is to offset you.
Yeah. Well, I think we all liked it. And it's a fantastic show.
I think that's the understatement of this whole thing.
We loved
it. Last hour and a half. This last hour and a half, you just undersold the lead.
It was all right.
Right. You know, I give it a 5 out of 10. I give it a JL Covan B-.
Yeah.
I knew it was great when JL didn't like it. That's how I knew. I said, this is some real good.
I didn't know he didn't
like it. Don't like it?
I guarantee he don't, man. Come on. Let's be honest.
We're just going on JL's path.
Need him to confirm it? I could probably DM him right now. He'll be like, yeah, I didn't really like it. I stopped watching episode 2. It's going to be some good black shit when you get the JL seal of disapproval.
I was shocked that he watched that show Woke on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
That he watched it like before any of us did. Mm. I was like, how do you see that already? It's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I just think from aesthetically, it looks fantastic. Like I got HBO Max on my PS4 Pro and, it's beautiful the way these colors pop.
Yeah. It's just Triple A title shit, man. You know, I know, sometimes my girl Raisana, you like joke about it or whatever, but I like me some sophisticated black shit, man. I like me some Sadiddy. It's like, I like Atlanta, like taking on the same, taking on something that people would have been like stereotypical, blah, 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 and being like, let's find the surrealness in this thing. I like that shit, man. So I, same thing happened with this where, the way that they build it, like, it's horror, it's 1950s racism. You would have never saw all this coming, man. And that, it blew me away.
Yeah. But you can't tell the story. You really can't. Like, you just have to experience it. I can't tell you what it is. You just have to experience it.
Yeah.
I can give you some hints, but I can't.
Watch that SNL sketch, Rod, and text me.
I will, man. I just DM JL to see if he liked Lovecraft, but... I got a feeling he's gonna say he stopped watching.
You already know.
I stopped after the white woman helped him in the first episode.
When I realized the white woman wasn't the main character, I was a little bit disappointed. Yeah.
You would think it would be me who didn't like it if the white woman wasn't.
Yeah. Is she gonna make it to your white starlet echelon? Are you now looking after her as an actress?
Abby Lee is, she's a cutie, but she, I think Jamie.
That narrow ass girl, boy, stop.
You?
Long, narrow.
Come on.
Narrow.
No, she's cute, but she's not like, I like Journey. I like Womie. She was on Luther the last season.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, she's bad. Like I would.
You better not try to big up that girl. add her to the white starlet list. Do that.
She was like a regular white woman to me, man.
Exactly. You can see her at any Applebee's.
Yeah, she worked at Hooters
right now.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't know, man. I mean, she was all right in this role. I feel like she didn't have that much to do. No. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like they made her so cold. I honestly would have to see another thing she did to really know if she can act, you know.
She was in Neon Demon, Mad Max, The Dark Tower with Idris.
Well, did she, you remember, you watched any of these? You remember her in any of this or no?
I don't remember her.
I don't remember her in The Dark Tower. I saw The Dark Tower. I don't remember.
I saw The Dark Tower too, and I don't remember her.
I don't remember her name.
She was in the Neon Demon. She might have been one of those models, but I don't really remember. Mm-hmm. I don't remember her.
Yeah, I got a feeling he's just giving her the white girl curve on the
I think so.
I think you're grading her on that curve.
I'm just saying she was fine. Like she's cute and she was
solid. Yeah, but I'm just, you know, it's just, you know what's funny is these black actors be fucking excellent as shit and we never hear of them until they're like 40. Or they don't get a starring role until they're like 50 years old and shit.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, it's like, we're like, you know, Abby Lee, up and coming, you know, prominent. It's like,
she's like 20?
I get tired of going on black actors' IMDb page where I'll be like, Jonathan Majors, man, what a breakout performance. 55. Wow.
No, Jonathan Majors is Yale Mafia. He's fine.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, Sterling K. Brown is like 40.
40.
It's like, man, right. If this motherfucker was white, dude, he would have starred in like 3 Spider-Man movies by now.
Yeah. It's the thing, like, what I've talked to Aisha Harris about, like, we're now starting to see these young black women get to evolve. And get to do like these genre films. Like you get a black girl that's on a popular CW series. Then she can do an indie movie. Then she's doing a horror movie. Then she's in a big budget movie. Like this girl, what's the girl from that movie? Oh my God. She was in A Wrinkle in Time. Was it?
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. The little girl, yeah.
She did
A Wrinkle in Time. Then she did a young adult movie. She did a movie based on a YA book.
Yeah, and then the girl that always what's the girl that always dated Amanda Stenberg? She's one.
Yeah,
she did a woke movie. She did a supernatural young adult joint. She's on a Netflix series that's The Eddie, which I need to finish. You know, like you're starting to see these younger black actresses get to do all these things. Like Journey Smollett's only 35.
Right.
And, you know, she led underground.
I mean, you know, Marsai Martin is, like, I get what you're saying, but it's just funny that so often I feel like we find talented blackness so late in the cycle.
Late, yeah.
Gabrielle Union
was like in her mid to late 20s when she did Bring It On.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's fucking insane when you think about it.
As great as she is, like, you know, she's like 27, 28 when she does 10 Things I Hate About You. She blows up a couple years later, like maybe a year or two later from Bring It On, and then she's off to the races. But
yeah, what's the other Regina? Not Regina King.
Regina Hall,
fucking powerhouse, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like we always late to the party where it's just like, damn, she can do everything. Like, who knew?
It's just opportunities, man. Like, you get to wait. She's like in her 40s when she does Support the Girls. You know, she's got little stuff like The Best Man, but that was 20. She was just a hot chick.
Yeah, she played a stripper.
Yeah, she played a stripper. And
in the first one.
In the first one.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, you know, like Anjanou Ellis, like she, you know, she did her.
Right. She was doing her thing, but not like this.
Now, Lupita.
We could have had this before.
Lupita's also Yale Mafia.
But Lupita is 37, dog.
She's relatively young.
But she's, she's 37.
But she's 37.
Her first major like role was 2013.
Yeah. How old was Angelina Jolie when she came out?
2013. So that's about, I mean, that's
2013. So like she was like 30 getting that first role like that. and she's worked ever since. This is not saying that, like, poor Lupita, you know what I'm saying? What it's saying to me is, if she had that same talent and was some white girl, we hear about her 10 years before that.
Oh, that's, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like a curve. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, good luck to Abby, you know, or Abby Lee, but I, you know,
Chris will have her wallpaper up at some point.
Yeah, she ain't exact. Yeah, she, you, she'll be your screensaver on your phone, but
she's got pretty eyes.
You know,
she's got pretty eyes. So
if I like book something in the next couple years that I blow up off of and I get to meet her and I'm dating her, will you guys be mad at me?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What if I can't lock down Journey Smollett? What if
Then I'm gonna be like, you didn't holler at one me? I mean, it's just,
I would have hollered at, I would holler at, I would kick none of the women on the show out of my bed.
I mean, I just feel like, you know, it's a lot of choices out there. Just be careful, brother. Okay.
All of them would get omelets from me
in the morning.
I would make a good ass, I get them, make them a good ass omelet.
Well, get on with it. That's Chris tagline. You're gonna get you an omelet.
Hey, you like I sprinkled that oregano in there, girl? That's for you.
Yeah, dude, come on, man. Like, you know how many times I want to take pictures of the omelets that I make and just be like, hell, look at this, ladies.
Man, I just realized I'm not following one me on Instagram. I'm gonna correct that right now.
I follow her too.
Yeah.
I like her. I like Journey. Been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
Everybody likes her.
Yeah. Right. Jonathan Majors, I didn't hear of until last Black Man in San Francisco.
That was his first thing.
Yeah.
I saw him in that, but I didn't really get down with him until the Five Bloods. I was like, oh shit.
Oh man.
Last Black Man was just.
Yeah.
Fucking incredible.
Yeah, he fucking murdered that shit, bro. Oh my god.
Yeah.
That type of role where you're an actor playing an actor in a fictional thing, like, that's so hard.
It is hard, yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the last, like, the third act is literally just that's just him. He takes the movie over, mm-hmm. and all that weird shit he was doing the first two acts, you're just like, how is he gonna put this together? And mm-hmm. when he's fucking like doing both parts of that altercation in the street, bro, he brought me to tears, man. That dude's a powerhouse.
That was one of those movies where I was like, when we talk about stuff being pretentious,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, but it was right up my alley.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like at the beginning, I was like, oh shit, okay.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah. I think it might have been you who recommended I watch it.
It was definitely Chris, because Chris was telling everybody to watch it.
Yeah, and I remember, like, starting it and being like, Chris and these motherfucking indie films, here we go with this bullshit. Yeah. And then
that's exactly what happened to me, and I stopped watching it.
Yeah, well, see? Exactly. Nah, bro, that third act, bro.
I can't do this.
That motherfucking, bro, when you hit that third act, you... Well, I was in this bitch like, ooh, it's getting dusty up. Ooh, okay.
It's so beautiful. Like, it was just like, I don't know, something about San Francisco. I was only there for a few days, but it was just like.
It was ahead of its time, because it was really a movie about, like, black male friendship and stuff. And it never, like, there's no love interest in the movie. Like, there's no, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no, like, romantic plot. There's no, like, real, like, the streets is coming for you type shit. It really was just more about, like, friendship, companionship, family, and all that shit, man. Mike Epps has some killer scenes in there, mm-hmm. like.
Mike Epps is a good actor, man.
He is, dog. He is.
That's why I thought he could do Richard Pryor. Like, when
Is he not doing it?
I don't know what the fuck's going on.
They keep putting the shit on hold.
Oh,
you hear about it, and then it goes back on hold. And then you hear about it, and it goes back on hold.
What's the remake they did with Whitney's last new movie with the singers? Like, the light, pretty light-skinned girl, Jordan Sparks.
Whitney?
Whitney's last movie. Jordan Sparks. I'm working with one hand.
You talking about Whitney Houston?
It was her last movie. Whitney Houston played her mom, Sparkle.
What?
Oh, wow.
Oh,
I didn't even know Sparkle? She was in that.
Yeah, 2012.
That shit must have been bad. I've never even seen that shit pop up on the end during the holidays.
It was.
That sounded like a Thanksgiving movie. It was on ABC, and it ain't been on yet.
Why are you shitting on black art, Randolph?
Didn't I'm shitting on that flowers. That's no. That's black another art, thing. And then you that's thing. We got to get to the point where we can shit on black art.
Yeah,
and that's what we. True. We got to get
true,
to that point.
True equality is gonna be when who was it? It was my man that made 12 Years a Slave, and he was like, "True equality is gonna be like when we can finally have mediocre black shit and just be like, it wasn't good."
Said that before though. Yeah. Like the guy that you know, the movies that we talk. What's the movie with the light skinned boy, Michael Ealy?
Oh, that was our shit, dog.
The perfect guy.
And wait, but didn't we also do The Intruder? Or was that a different person?
We did.
Yeah, yeah.
We did, but see, that's what Janelle James is doing her show about.
Yeah.
Like, but, Sparkle, Mike Epps played a comedian that was like, basically Richard Pryor. You know, and I was just like,
oh, okay.
He was great. You know, the movie was, but you know,
I'm trying to see. You talk shit about me. I know it.
Like, I haven't seen it.
It's all
that
right.
That is a holiday. That is one of them holiday joints that's on in the background while y'all are playing spades. That's all that shit is.
It is fine. It's like, it's fine. It's not terrible.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I thought Chris Rock's new girlfriend's.
Oh, it's a musical?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, wait. Did you say Chris Rock got a new girlfriend?
He's dating Jeffrey Wright's ex-wife.
Okay.
This shit's turning into Baller Alert.
The English chick? He's dating the English chick?
Carmen Ehole.
Oh, Carmen. Oh, she was in motherfucking. Oh my God. She was in that motherfucking True Detective Season 3.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Bruh,
I had been looking at him do these interviews, and I was like, that dude looks good. Like, I don't know what Chris is doing, but Chris is, like, working out. He's fucking in therapy.
Yeah, he's working out. He's all ripped.
I could tell his hair. He got that sponge that you comb your hair with.
Yeah, I gotta get that.
Yeah, I said, this brother making some, I knew it was a new woman. I knew it.
I just ordered my exercise bike. Now all I need is that sponge thing.
That sponge? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew it, bro.
You're right, Rod. That makes perfect sense. Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He been doing promo interviews for Fargo. I seen him on the Daily Show. I said, this nigga looking good. What is he doing? What's the secret? A new woman.
Standing up taller. He's got his shoulders all back. You know, shoulders up back. He's up tall and high.
Like, confident. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's why he been saying this stupid shit about politics. He's confident as hell now, boy.
I can say anything.
He's like, it's really both parties' fault. I'm like, there you go. Look at him. New woman. Got a whole new attitude.
That's what it is.
Jason Whitlock is great. All right. So, well, let's.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Not the Whitlock.
This has been fucking awesome, guys. Plug some stuff, Randolph.
I don't really have nothing coming up other than the podcast, Three Guys On. Which you guys, anybody listening to this has obviously listened to it at some point.
Sure. Yeah.
You get at me on Facebook, Real Talk For You. On Facebook, I'm Randolph Terrence. On Twitter, I'm Real Talk For You. At me, follow me. You know what I'm getting tired of? Look, if you retweet my stuff, if you like something, why don't you retweet it?
Oh.
I can't stand that. You like it, but you don't retweet it? Retweet it.
Bane of my existence, man. I don't get these people selfish.
You know? I got 300 likes on someone, like, and not one of y'all could retweet the shit. The two retweets, like, it's one button to push.
I don't even like shit. I just retweet it. It's all alley-oops to the timeline. Like, go be somebody. You know, like, if I like Chris's joke, I want everyone to like Chris's joke.
Yeah, retweet me.
What kind of selfish ass shit is a like? Ooh, I like that. I like, ooh, I, that's just for me.
Man, retweet it.
Yeah. You know. We all here trying to blow up.
Right. help us.
JL got a couple of retweets. Now he's having the most lucrative career
he's had today.
Yeah. I'm glad to be part of that. I'll be throwing all them videos to the time. Go get a new car, dog. Do it on me. Selfish.
So get at my stuff, and when you, if you like it, don't like it, retweet it. Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Agree. Let it all out, Randolph.
Same thing Randolph just said. Rodimus Prime on Twitter, and check out our show, The Blackout Tips, starting October 26th. It'll only be on Spotify, so Spotify is free. You can listen to podcasts on there for free. If you want to pay, I'm sure that's cool too, but if you want to do it for free, you still can listen to our show, and we hope all y'all transition over. We love Chris, love Randolph, and it's just cool to be able to spend a Friday night sipping on some brown, mm-hmm. and talking to us this black shit.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Why not? I say that a lot now. Why not? Why mm-hmm. not?
Thanks so much, guys. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy.
Thanks for having us. Love you, boy. Thanks.
Love you, guys.
Chris, let me know if you need me to send you this MP.